My name is Lori, and I'm an alcoholic. Oh, my gosh. Wow. And with that, it's my opportunity to begin to introduce the speakers. Our meeting topic today is victory and defeat, and it's my honor to introduce our first speaker from Tennessee, Buster.
I'm Buster, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm glad I didn't get drunk last night, and I don't think I'm going to be drunk tonight. I have also fell in love. I do that quite frequently. I don't even know if she's married or not, but I'm willing to become a Mormon if, I mean, you know. I have character defects. Mine. Are you married?
Is that? That's my husband.
Sir, I'm be.
I'm honored.
You know, I have the. I don't know whether you know or not. No, you don't know. I have the desire to say something smart. I'm not kidding. What do I use up? 2 minutes?
You're good.
I really do have the desire to say something smart. And I want to appear to you as to be smart and say something spiritual and appear that I'm floating up here on some kind of a rug. I am not. Floating on no rug, and I do not claim to be a spiritual giant. I'm still in love. I used to drink whiskey, and to the best of my knowledge, I started drinking whiskey and beer when I was about 12 or 13. And I quit drinking whiskey on, I'm not going to tell you. I might, but might not. I quit drinking whiskey on December the 7th of 1986. And I don't say that to, in all seriousness, to try to impress you. I don't say that to try to impress you. But that's it. And the reason I quit drinking on that day was my higher power at that time, my wife, left me. And as of today, she has never come back. And I thank God for that. Any chance of a divorce? I don't really know what to say. I have been fortunate enough to know some of the finest people in this world, in my opinion, in Alcoholics Anonymous. Just pick it up. Thought I'd be smart and, you know, run it up. I'll just pick it up. I have been fortunate enough to know some of the finest people in this world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have heard some of the smartest remarks in Alcoholics Anonymous. One fella in Lebanon, Tennessee, that I think the world of love very deeply, puts it like this: until you have reached your own personal level of desperation, you will not change. I don't know about you all, but I hope that I reach my own personal level of desperation on December the 7th of 1986, when my higher power left me. We had been married for 23 years, and we should not have been married that long. She should have divorced me a long time before she did. I didn't want Mama to leave. I called her Mama, and that is the way that I thought it ought to be. Mama was supposed to take care of me, and Mama did for a long time, till Mama got sick of me. And there I was, a 44-year-old child, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And I had been back to the Southern Baptist Church, and I had learned to bind the devil. I don't know if there's any Southern Baptist in here. I don't know if there's anybody in here that knows how to bind the devil. But if you want to know, I'll tell you after the meeting outside. And maybe it worked. She never did come back. How long I've been going? 10 minutes?
About 5 minutes.
5 minutes?
About 5 minutes.
I got to go 15 more?
Don't you worry.
I don't think I love you anymore. My drink, another smart fella, and I'm not kidding, wise old man, he's dead now, and I preached his funeral. I know you. Don't I know you from somewhere? It's okay. I was drunk. Another wise old man that I knew, what did he say? I forgot. He said that at some point in time, your drinking changes gears. Am I making myself plain? Am I speaking too loud? And I know in my case, my drinking changed gears. My daddy blew his head off in 68, I think. And I had been drinking for about 13 years at that time. But after that, my drinking changed gears. And I went from low gear to high gear. And for the next 17 years, there were very few nights that I wasn't drunk. And I didn't intend for it to happen. I didn't know what was happening. But it happened. And I considered the people that didn't drink weird. I also say, and I considered addicts, we called them dope addicts weird. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not knocking addicts at all. I'm just telling my story. Oh, the addicts was awful, and we'd be drunk and we'd talk about them. There would be a doctor's wife that was an addict, and a dope addicts was just awful. I will say this. I could not drink the quantity of alcohol that many of you drunk. But I'll bet you I could out-hate you. I could wish you was dead and rotted down yonder where I thought there was a down yonder at that time. I no longer think there's a down yonder, but you may think that, and that's okay. And I'm not in love again. I prided myself on how intense I could hate. The more I drank, the quieter I got. And I would seethe with anger, and I could hate the paint off the wall, just drip off the wall. My sponsor told me that. The only reason I know it, the dripping off the wall part. And I never said anything to any of them, I don't reckon. And they kept their wives and their money and their homes and that kind of stuff. And I wound up 44 years old trying to heat my house with a coal oil lantern. Now, a coal oil lantern is a kerosene lantern. Maybe some of y'all don't know. We call it coal oil in Tennessee. I didn't have enough money to put fuel in the fuel tank. My brother-in-law gave me a $5 army sleeping bag, and it got a hole in it, and feathers went flying everywhere, and I took a duct tape and taped it up. Now, that sounds kind of pitiful. Maybe it was. I had a job, but there was more outflow than inflow. And I was afraid to answer the telephone, and I was afraid to go to the mailbox. I was just afraid. Something told me that day that she left me that I had to quit drinking and live. And I've not had a drink since. I didn't think about being an alcoholic. I just knew that I had to quit drinking and live, to live. Fortunately enough for me, I was able to go to a treatment center. My daughter was in a treatment center. I didn't go. I went to family week. I don't know what's funny about that, but I'll say it again if you all laugh. Y'all ain't laughing at my accent, are you? Y'all hurt my feelings. I'll hate every one of you, because I know how to hate. Anyway, my daughter went to treatment center, and I got down there listening to them people, and I said to them, I said, you think I might have a problem? They said, we don't know, but there's a building right over there that'll give a test. You can go over and take it, and they'll tell you. And I went over, and I took it, and I passed it. I said, what I do now? And they said, we want you to come to treatment. And I called an old buddy of mine that had been in treatment 3 different times, and I'll tell you just exactly what he told me. He said, go on into AA. Said, that's all they'll do for you. Don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking treatment. I'm just telling my story. Get tired of leaning over. So I come on into AA. What's funny about this? Can't you afford a higher microphone? I can't hear good. What was said? So I'm not too smart. 20 minutes. What's more time I got? 6 minutes. Well, I come on in the AA and I They told me something about leave the women alone. I said, that don't apply to me. And I found me a prospect. And I took that prospect out, and I almost got drunk about that, and I got that woman back, and I ain't never seen her since. And I never had another date for 2.5 years. And I can swear to you that you can live without alcohol for 23 years and without a woman for 2.5. Listen, I didn't come in here to be laughed at. I'll tell you that right now. I'm supposed to be talking about victory and defeat. Well, I got defeated. When your wife's left you and you're broke and you're scared to death and you're 44 years old and you can't afford to go to Shoney's and you got a college education, I'm highly educated. I got a college education. I didn't learn nothing. I got a paper on the wall that said I have got a college education. May I borrow your water? Thank you. Anyway, I never thought that I could be happy again. I thought I could never have anything again. I never thought I could go anywhere, any place again. Talking about material things, I know they're not that important. They're not. But if they're not important to you all, give them to me. I'm serious as a heartbeat. If you got anything good, I'll come get it. You don't have to send it to me. It won't cost you a thing. I will. Please raise your hand if you've got something good to give me. I didn't come here to be laughed at. Whiskey calmed the pain. It killed the pain. And I could be... I didn't feel from birth adequate. I felt less than. But when I drank, I could be pretty and smart and cute and lovable and all that kind of crap. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't mean to be this way. And I'm not glad. I can't say I'm glad I'm this way. But I'm glad to have met what I consider to be the cream of the crop of the world, you all, you people, and the people that I've known like you. I have never loved anybody, including my parents, like I have loved some of you people. And the way love, to me, love is just telling you the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. I don't like everybody. I don't have good days every day. But I wouldn't trade any of it for the way it was, because I was on a... I don't think the apple falls far from the tree. And as I said, my daddy blew his head off at 58, and I'm 68, and I'm still going strong, still work, still capable of falling in love at any time. I have character defects, people. They've not been removed. But I don't hate nobody today. How much time I got? I don't hate nobody today. I don't wish nobody was dead and rotted in a bad place. And I don't believe there's no bad place. I will say this. I have been in the presence of a power higher than myself 2 times in my life. So I know, for me, there is a higher power. Knowing and believing are two different things. I believe that I'm going to get me something to eat after a while, but I don't know. But I know that there is a power higher than me. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Bester. Okay, now I'm going to... Our next speaker is Jamie O. from Florida.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Jamie Allwell, and I am from Key West, Florida. Home group is the Fellowship Group, and it's very much a pleasure to be here today. I want to thank Bester for making me laugh, because they told me when I came to AA that someday I would laugh again, and today I can. So thank you for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us. He sat down next to me a couple of minutes ago, and he looked at me, and he said, "You're nervous." I said, "No, actually, I was nervous earlier. Now I'm okay." He said, "No, you're nervous." I said, "Thank you for letting me know how I feel." I always need help with that. I'm not too good at it on my own. It's really an honor to be here. I want to thank my front row on this side, that is my old timers, my partner, Mr. Len and Sue from New York, who arranged for me to be here today to share my story a little bit with you. And on the other side of the room, I have some of my family from California and friends, and the rest of you are just my friends that I haven't met yet, and that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about to me today. When I saw my topic, I love it. You know, they give an alcoholic a topic, what, 6 weeks ago? So I get to spend 6 weeks thinking about what I'll say to you. You know, it wasn't every moment of every day, but it intermittently would come through my mind. I'd be at a meeting, I'd hear something, as Bester said, smart and wise. Oh, I'll say that too. That's really good, you know. That way they're going to be sure they know that I am a sober woman of dignity and sense, and not quite floating on that little spiritual cloud that Bester was talking about, but certainly I have some of it by now. And that's pretty much how I think about myself sometimes when I'm too busy thinking about myself. I am an alcoholic. My alcoholic mind, my alcoholic thinking did not all go away the day that I put down that drink, but it has continued to dissipate and to change the longer I've stayed sober and the more time that I've spent working with others and the more time I've spent with my sponsors and reading the literature and praying and asking you to help me. I was thinking when I was listening to Bester that when I was drinking and I was defeated when I got here, the one thing that I never did was ask for help. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you told me if I wanted what you had, I was going to have to do what you do. And part of that was to ask others to help me and allow them to help me. So perhaps that's one of the biggest differences in my life today, being a sober woman, is I am willing to ask for help. And when I was sitting in the bar and the bartender wasn't fast enough with the next White Russian or 7 and 7 or Stinger or Slow Gin Fizz or any damn thing I could get my hands on, I wasn't thinking about asking for help. It just never dawned on me that there was another way. And I loved it. I was talking to somebody before the meeting today about being a normie, you know. We were talking about our family and friends, and I don't know if I was ever a normal drinker or not. I remember in high school cruising around with my boyfriend in a car and another couple in the front, and we had a couple of Michelobes on the weekend, and that's pretty much what drinking was about when I was 16 years old. And we played Kissy Face, and we went to the drive-in movie, and a little longer after that, we got into other substances that I won't discuss today because this is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. But for any of you that are still like me carrying around a tissue whenever it's cold or having some other difficulties, you're in the right place. And I just want to let you know that. and that's all I'll say about that. But I am one of those dope addicts also. Having said that, I went from the age of 16 in high school, learning Latin and French, growing up in a nice place and having parents and a bunch of other stuff, to quitting high school, becoming 18, sneaking in the bars at 17, and by 18 years old, on my 18th birthday, I drank 18 White Russians. I danced with the wrong guy. The girl sucker punched me. I knocked her out cold. The only time I've ever fully force punched anybody in my life, we do learn some things, I busted my hand and spent the first of several times at the hospital in my drinking years, having a doctor fix my body and tell me that I obviously did not need any anesthesia because I was just fine the way I was. And that's pretty much what happened to me in terms of my drinking. I went from 0 to 400 in about 2 years. I am of Irish Catholic descent. I'm not sure if that has anything to do with it or not, but a whole bunch of my family seems to have a drinking problem. Going back to my great-great-grandfather, who brought O'Will's Irish whiskey into Brooklyn, New York, and died at a fairly early age. My grandfather on that side didn't drink at all. He was a banker and a fine man and died of a heart attack somewhere around 58. Nothing to do with alcohol or drugs, as best I can tell. And then my father, who was a raging alcoholic drug addict and died sober with 36 years a few years back. On my mother's side, there doesn't seem to be a lot of drinking. There was Quakers and educated people and college professors, and then there was my mother, who lived with my father for many, many years and became an alcoholic, as best I can tell. She died not drinking, attending AA occasionally, with about 35 years of not drinking a few years ago. So that's sort of my family history. I have 6 siblings. Some of them are in the program. My sister Kathy's here. It's always an absolute incredible pleasure to sit with her because she's one of the few people left that I ever see that I drank with. And boy, did we drink together. I was telling my partner the other day, he and I were driving somewhere, and I can't remember, we're often talking about recovery because we're both in recovery and we love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and we work with others a lot and go to lots of meetings. But we were talking about something, and I told him, well, Kathy and I used to drive around in the morning, because we probably hadn't slept anyway, with champagne for breakfast between us. And for anybody who drank like I drank, it wasn't always a top-shelf variety. It was pretty much anything we could find in the local five, you know, the Quick Mart, the whatever it was. And it was about $7.99 a bottle. And that was how our day started, with a lot of other things to cloud our thinking and our minds. And, you know, it's amazing to me that today we're both alive and we're both here and that we both love AA. And that I haven't seen her personally, physically, since last October when I went to the convention. And it doesn't matter, because every time she stands beside me now, not only is it my younger sister that I absolutely adore and cherish, but it is another woman in sobriety. And it is such an amazing thing for any of you that have family, the same way I feel about my sponsor and my other great friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a connection here of you helping me and me helping you that I didn't have in my life before I came to AA. My defeat story is very easy. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous through a treatment center in 1983. And the guy that asked me to go to treatment that I had been living with told me that there was something wrong with me. Seriously. And I think he's really the first one who ever said it like that. They've said some other things over the years, like, go away, stop stealing my drugs. Do not drink my whole liquor cabinet, my brother, when you come to visit for the weekend, even the creme de menthe. You know, what is wrong with you? But this guy said that to me. There's something wrong with you. And he said that for two reasons. One was he would take me offshore in a large sailboat so that I couldn't possibly get any more booze. About a mile and a half from shore down in Key West. And I figured out that you could put all your clothes in a Ziploc, swim to shore, put them back on dry, and then go downtown to the bars. And it worked. I didn't drown or anything. So that was one thing that gave him an inkling there was something wrong with me. And the second thing was I was in a hotel, and this is right before he had asked me to go to the mental health clinic and talk to somebody. And I was holed up in a place called the Red Rooster. And I'd been there for a few days. I had a case of 100-proof Smirnoff. Now, for anybody who's never drank 100-proof Smirnoff, it became a drink of choice because it tasted like lighter fluid. And when you drank it, it was sort of like a mallet, just bong on the head. Everything got foggy really fast. And that's the way I drank at the end of my drinking. People say we drank for effect, we drank for to hide our feelings, we drank when we were happy, we drank when we were sad. I drank to hide from Jamie, and I did it real, real well. I had no clue what the hell was going on almost all the time anymore. I really didn't. I was functioning, sort of. If you saw me some days, I might have looked almost human. But on the inside, phew, there was nothing left. And it was, I don't know, like sort of, I think of like a cross between a little dog that's like sick and broken and maybe a frothing wild one with rabies, you know. I was sort of a combination of both depending on what hour you ran into me. Anyway, so they had to take the hotel door off to get in this room. Because I was probably semi-comatose. I had also done some pills with my vodka. And when they got the door off and they got me to come to, or brought me back to life or whatever they did that day, I told them I have always been a heavy sleeper. And I don't know what all the fuss was about. That was the second incident that led for him to say to me, there is definitely something wrong with you. And I want you to come with me to the mental health clinic. We're going to go talk to somebody. And I'm not even sure because I was a blackout drinker, but it's the first person in AA that I really remember. And his name was David R. He had 12 years at the time, and he was a counselor also. And he, you know, you got to remember, I came out of a hotel. I've been in there for 3 days. I don't think taking regular showers. I know I wasn't eating anything. As I said, I have a tendency to do a bunch of other things that are unhealthy besides drink 100-proof Smirnoff vodka. So I didn't look really great. I was dressed in the only kind of clothes I wore then. It was somewhere between a prostitute and a vampire. Literally. And I went to the mental health clinic, and David R. said to me, you know, you're not looking that great, kid. What's going on here? You know, and I don't really remember it well, but I do remember that I went to treatment the next day or 2 days afterwards. I drank on the way up, had to have a bottle of wine or I wasn't going. The guy that I had been living with took me. And they put me in a treatment center in Miami for 30 days. And what happened was I would give them enough each time they were going to throw me out because I wouldn't cooperate. And then they'd let me stay. And they recommended a halfway house. I said, okay, they wouldn't let me out till I agreed to it. I agreed to it. I got out. I went right back to Key West with that guy. And within 5 days, I was back in the same patterns that I had been in for 12 to 15 years, depending on what dates you take. And I didn't get sober, but I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous up there, and Al-Anon, as a matter of fact. And 2 years later, when I was back in another hotel room, and I was drinking again, and this time it was Michelob and the leftover champagne from a wedding that didn't take place, I was 4.5 months pregnant. I was 30 years old. And this time, nothing really different happened. Pregnancy was sort of new. The tears came down my face. That wasn't new. It was the morning and it was coming up and I hadn't slept. That wasn't new. But what was new, I even asked God to help me because I had bounced in and out of AA since that treatment center. I had gotten 89 days, a basket of white chips. I'd had some great sponsors. And I hadn't ever done everything you suggested. And I hadn't given up. And I hadn't been defeated. But now when I was in this hotel room this last time, pregnant, I think what happened was I gave up. And I asked God one more time. I said, please help me. Not only am I going to kill myself, which quite frankly, I was on the suicide, installment plan. I never tried to commit suicide, but the way I lived and drank was definitely going to end up there. But this time I said, don't let me kill this baby too. Please, God, help me. And all I know is somewhere in the next day or two, I made it back to AA. I grabbed one of those women who had been one of the women trying to help me stay sober. Her name is Sanford Birdsey. I know she wouldn't mind if I used her last name. She's lying in a Miami hospital. She's had open heart surgery. She's 45 years sober. She's 85 years old. And she has been my sponsor for 25 years since I got sober March 29th of 1985. And thank you. One of the other women that today helps me is in the front row. Her name is Kiki, and Kiki M. from Key West. And I'm so grateful for these ladies because they turned my defeat in life, my defeat in drinking, into victory. And the way that they taught me to do that was one day at a time. We were talking before the meeting, and the chairman said to Buster, how long have you been sober? And he said, since this morning. And I laughed because I can relate to that. You know, the years go by, but I'll tell you what, I'm at a meeting of AA today. I'm with some women and some people that I love in AA today. I'll probably talk to somebody with less time and somebody with more time today. I've already read some literature, hit my knees, and asked God, please help me to stay clean and sober, in my case, today. And also help me not to be a complete nutcase when I hit the stand this afternoon or this morning in front of my AA friends and family. Show me your will, not mine. Show me how to be a sober woman of dignity and grace. That's a lot, I know, especially for me, because I came from a place that had none of those things when I was drinking. I loved the discussions in early sobriety about low bottom and high bottom. I'm not sure. I think I was a combination of the two. On a good day, I had a car and a place to live, plenty of booze and friends. And on a bad day, I looked like something that the cat had drug in. I wasn't sure where I was going to sleep that night, and I might remember you if I came out of my blackout. So all I can say is I found a bottom, desperation that we talk about. I found mine for today, one day at a time. And it was a very, very lonely, sad, broken place. And I pray to God that I never have to see that again, because I am an alcoholic. And when I drink, something happens to me that, as my good friend said, is not normal. And today I know this is a disease, and I am still sick. I have alcoholism, not alcoholism. But I am a woman in recovery, and as our book says, who likes to admit complete defeat? Well, I do. I learned it here. It did not come natural to me. I learned to say, please help me, because I can't do this alone. Or please listen to the strange things that come out of my head, even as a sober woman with 25 years of sobriety. I still get some strange thoughts up there once in a while. And I need you to help me filter them with the steps and with God, higher power, good orderly direction, group of drunks. It all works for me very well, thank you. And that girl, that child I was pregnant with, will be 25 years in August. She's an interior designer in Charleston, South Carolina. She's a little feisty, ha ha. Don't know where she got that from. But she is alive and well, and so am I. And for that, I am eternally grateful, because I would not be sitting among you anywhere today. I truly believe I'm not one of those that was going to continue. We say it's worse if you die drinking or if you just went along being in pain and suffering. I don't think I was going to be the pain and suffering for 25 more year variety. I think I would be dead today. And instead, I have exactly what my sponsors and friends in AA told me I would have, and that's a life beyond my wildest dreams. The greatest gift that I have today is all of those awful, terrible things that I did when I was drinking. You told me that when I got here. Someday my past would become an amazing treasure. And today I know that's true. Not only am I not ashamed of the past, nor wish to shut the door on it, although I'm not all that proud of some of it, quite frankly, it has become the greatest gift I have, because it enables me to help other women, and some men, but especially the women that I work with, get sober and stay sober one day at a time. So from that defeat of being a broken alcoholic comes the victory of being a sober woman with you, still helping me one day at a time in AA. And I thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you, Jamie. Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Dennis W. from Arizona.
I thought Lori had looked familiar when I met, and I didn't realize I had met her at one of our area assemblies in Arizona. She was the delegate in New Mexico, from New Mexico in 2006 and 2007. Yeah, and she came over and spoke to us. Well, this is great. Hi, how are you all doing? My name is Dennis, and I'm an alcoholic. And I have to warn you right up front, I am one of those alcoholics who also did a lot of drugs. Don't be concerned, though, I did do them alcoholically. You know, it took me a long time to realize that I was really an alcoholic and belonged here. You know, and I appreciate the fact that you guys let me stay around here long enough to figure that out. You know, alcohol was always there, along with a lot of other stuff, you know, but it was always, you know, it was always there. It was like the omnipresent friend, you know. Victory, when I got this topic, victory and defeat, you know, and that just really was what my life was about. I mean, that's what my life has been about. You know, the victory, of course, has been just incredible, wonderful life that I've gotten in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the defeat, I think I really realized the defeat when my wife, by the way, my wife Vivian's here, and you can catch her later. She's speaking at 1:30 on gratitude and your attitude. And she's a hoot. And she and I are together 44 years. We went through everything together. We were codependents and co-defendants. And, you know, our defeat was we were standing in front of, this is some years ago, we were standing in front of a federal magistrate, and we were about to be sentenced to time in federal prison. We'd been drinking and drugging for, you know, 20-some-odd years, and they'd finally caught up to us. And the judge looks at us and says, you know, I'm going to give you, the judge is sentencing us, and she says, I'm going to give you 4 weeks to get your affairs in order, and then you're to report to your respective prisons. And I'm thinking to myself, 4 weeks to get my affairs in order? I hadn't been able to get my affairs in order in 40 years. I don't know how I was going to do it in 4 weeks. But I said, sure, Your Honor, no problem. We'll see you there. Right? Well, I want to tell you, those 4 weeks went and came pretty quickly. Or came and went pretty quickly. And we spent the entire time doing what we had been doing for many, many years, which was getting loaded, you know. And finally, the morning came to go, and I looked at Vivian, and she looked at me, and I said, I'm not going. She said, I'm not going either. We became fugitives. We decided we'd better get out of New York because that's where they were looking for us. So we took off and we drove upstate New York, and we're in this little small town upstate New York. It's we're in this real cheap motel. It's 2 a.m. in the morning. Vivian is drunk on her ass. And she says, I'm hungry. I'm going to go get something to eat. And I said, drive careful. Right? She wanders out, finds her way to an all-night diner, gets in, gets something to eat, comes back out, and she can't remember where the motel is. And she says, wait a minute, is it it? No, wait a minute, I think it's over. A New York State trooper pulls her over. Right? He says, have you been drinking, ma'am? She says, only a couple, right? You know, a couple of pints, right? So she gives him her license. Now, there's a federal fugitive warrant out for us. And, you know, so she shows him the key to the motel and says, listen, I'm lost. I don't know where my motel is. Right? Now he's got her license with her name on it and the key to the motel. So we're both gone, you know. She's sure of that, but she figures, what could she do, right? You know, she had to get something to eat. So he goes back and runs her license in the car, and she's thinking all this stuff. He's going to arrest her and then go back to the motel and get me, and then that's going to be the end of it. 5 minutes later, he comes back to the car, hands her back her license, and says, ma'am, your motel is down the road about a mile that way. Drive carefully. She's drunk. I don't know. So she says, okay. She gets out of there. She comes back to the motel. She says, Dennis, we got to get out of here. They're going to figure out who we are, and they're going to come and get us, you know. So we jumped in the car and started driving back to the city. We figured, you know, at least maybe there's so many crazies in New York, we could kind of fit in a little, you know, slip in between, right? And so I'm thinking to myself, boy, are we lucky. You know, God is giving us a little more rope. That's all. We're just not quite ready to surrender, you know, and God's just saying, okay, let them go a little more, right? So we get back into New York. And I don't know if any of you ever been in New York. Do you know what they call Alphabet City, the Lower East Side of New York? They call it Alphabet City because the street names are Avenue A, Avenue B, Avenue C, Avenue D, right? And the further up the alphabet you go, the worse the neighborhood gets. And it is so bad that the police don't even go in there. It just runs wild. And what they have to do, though, is they have to put up this little show like they're really doing something. And so once every 3 or 4 months, they have what they call a sweep. And they'll get on the roof of a building across from a drug dealer, and they'll just arrest everybody who goes and visits them that day. That's the day I showed up. I go in, buy some dope, come out, get in the car. I drive around the corner. They pull me over. Now, I know there's a federal fugitive warrant out for me. And so I didn't have my own ID on me. I had fake ID, you know. So I show them my identification, and they said to me, Dr. Spencer, you're under arrest. Next thing I knew, I'm in the Manhattan Criminal Courts building. It's a place they call the Tombs, Because it's like, it's a real old, old thing. And it's, and the cells are down in the basement. It's like a dungeon down there. And it's like full of people. I mean, it's just is. There's, you know, there's all these people. And there's no place to sit. There's no place to anything. I'm laying on the floor. And I'm, you know, the floor is filthy. There's mud and cigarette butts. And I'm filthier than the floor because I've been on the run from this federal fugitive warrant, you know. And I didn't care. I had no idea what was going to happen to me. They fingerprinted me, so I knew for sure they were going to figure out who I was. And I'm just laying on the floor trying to figure out how I'm going to get through the night. You know, no drugs, no alcohol, nothing. I'm laying on this floor. Well, I want to tell you, that was a long night. And when morning came, I felt like a wrung-out dish rag. I mean, it was just, they could have done it. I couldn't see anything. I couldn't hear anything. They could have done anything with me. I did not care. And they came and they said, all right, let's go. We're all going up to court. And I'm just walking along like a zombie, you know. And they get us up to court. And an illegal aid attorney comes over to me. And he says, I'm not even listening to him. But he said one thing. He said, Dr. Spencer, if you'll plead guilty, they'll let you out for time served. Now, I heard that. So all of a sudden, I'm up in front of the judge, and the judge says, all right, you're charged with such. How do you plead? I said, guilty, Your Honor. He said, time served. 5 minutes later, I'm back out on the street. I can't believe it. They had me. They had me fingerprinted, everything. God, just give me a little more rope. Not quite ready yet. Not quite ready to surrender. A week later, 2 o'clock in the morning, we're back down in Alphabet City looking to buy some drugs. It's not a good place to be hanging out at 2 o'clock in the morning. So we've got a taxi cab, and Vivian's holding the cab on the corner while I go into the block to buy the drugs. Well, while I'm gone, the cab driver says to her, I hope he doesn't get beat. Oh, my God, Vivian says, this guy must be a cop moonlighting as a taxi driver. He knows what we're doing here. Real big, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning in Alphabet City. What do you think we're doing there? Right? So I get back in the car with 15 bags of dope in my pocket, and we sit down, and this guy turns around and says, I was a slave to drugs and alcohol for 25 years. But I don't have to live like that anymore because I have God in my life. And I said, oh, great. I want to go home and do my drugs. And this guy's talking to me about God. You know, come on. But then he says to us, he says, do you two want to stop? And you know, without a moment's hesitation, we both said yes. We'd reached that point in our lives where we couldn't live with it. We couldn't live without it. We didn't know how to stop. And so he said, then let's join hands and pray and ask God to help you to stop. Now, you know, I had prayed before. You know, oh, God, make sure he's there. Make sure he's got the stop. Oh, God, please don't let me get beat, you know. I always prayed and asked God to help me to stay sick. It never occurred to me to ask God to help me to get better. But there in the back of that taxi cab, with 15 bags of dope in my pocket, holding hands with this taxi driver I had never met, I finally surrendered and I asked God to help me to stop. Less than 8 hours later, the federal marshals picked us up like they'd been waiting for us for, you know, it was like they couldn't find it. They had us our driver's license. They had us stopped. They had me fingerprinted. Nothing. They couldn't find me. The minute we surrendered, they said, oh, they finally surrendered. Let's go pick them up now. You know, I had no idea that was to be the last time that I ever took a drink or a drug. And it's almost 24 years. It's over 24 years now. And what they did, I was chained, shackled, thrown on a prison bus, and driven to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'll tell you, I still look back on prison as one of the most positive experiences of my life. That's where I found Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where my life started to change. My life changed so much. There was so much victory in that defeat. You know, I go into the prisons all the time, and I see these guys, you know, and I say, you know, going to prison doesn't ensure that you're hitting bottom. I see guys in prison all the time and say, hey, I got it going. They're in prison, and they think they're, you know, they're handling it. They're managing their lives, you know. Jeez, I don't know. I was real clear that I did not know how to manage my own life. And I was willing to surrender, and I was willing to take help for the first time in my life. And my life started to change so dramatically, you know. I still take stuff that I learned in prison and put it in my life every day. You know, I mean, one of the first things they told me when I went to prison was, if you want to do your time well, get you some business and mind it. And, you know, it's been a great philosophy. And I've used it. I learned how to work. You know, I did nothing but steal and sell drugs for 20 years. I had no idea how to show up, how to be a worker among workers, how to do all this stuff. I learned all that in prison. You know, I learned how to be. And, you know, God has just given me more and more. And you know, I remember when I first got out of prison, we were living in this basement apartment and in this nice neighborhood. But it was kind of like a, you know, basement apartment. And I was walking the 8 blocks to the subway to go to work. And I saw all these nice cars. And I thought to myself, gee, it would really be nice to have a car, you know? And then I caught myself and I said, God, please don't give me anything I'm not ready for. And one day at a time, God has given me everything I could possibly imagine. You know, but the best thing is that I have inside of me the sure knowledge that God has taken care of me. How much time do I have? Hey, oh, geez, plenty of time. God, I could tell you my whole life story in 8 minutes. You know, when I first got out, I was talking about work. You know, when I first got out, I didn't know what I was going to do, but a job was put in my life, and it was great. They loved me at this job right up until they fired me. And I had a great attitude, you know. But then I got the second job, and this job was even better than the first. They were paying me more money. It was great. It was everything I wanted, and I loved it, and they loved me there right up until they fired me. Then I got this third job. Now, I want to tell you, I will never have a job in my life where they loved me as much as they loved me at this job. It was like, oh, Dennis, my God, we're so lucky to have you. Your work is so great. We're just thrilled right up until the day they fired me. And I want to tell you, when I got fired that third time, I got it. You know, I've always wanted, like, I wanted billboards. I wanted God to say, Dennis, here's where you're supposed to be today. Sign God. You know, I want to tell you, when you walk into work and they tell you you're fired, that's a really good sign that you don't belong there, that you're not supposed to be there. You know? And every time I have been fired in life, God has continually taken me to new heights and put more and more in my life as I became ready for it. You know? I will tell you, the amends process in this is just amazing. You know, my parents suffered with me for a long time. I was a hippie in the 60s, and then, you know, I was just, we'd call them from, you know, Mexico City, hey, please send money, you know. I mean, it was like, you know, they just didn't know what to do with me. And then my parents were in Tucson, and we ended up in New York. And we were dealing drugs and making a lot of money and doing all kinds of stuff, and I would call them on the phone and say, hey, you know, business is great. Things are going great. You know, we're in it. And I'd send them gifts, and they were so happy. Their wayward son had finally straightened out. You know, they were just really, you know, it gave them a lot of comfort in their declining years to know that I had gotten my act together and was doing well, right up until they got a call. Mr. Wilson, this is the FBI. Your son is a fugitive. If he contacts you, let us know. And that's how my parents found out that I was in trouble. Well, I finally did call them from prison, collect, and they wouldn't take the call. They said, it's a collect call from Dennis. They said, no, we will not take the charges. Our relationship had deteriorated to the point where they didn't even want to take a collect phone call from me. Well, as you know, this program is amazing, and these steps are amazing, and this amends process. Both of my parents passed away in 2000, but several years before they did it, they set up a family trust, and they took everything that they owned in the world and put it into that trust. And guess who they made the trustee of that trust? That's right, me. Not my brother, who is a PhD psychologist in Los Angeles, but me, you know? And we went from not being willing to take a collect phone call to trusting me with everything they had in the world. And that's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the miracle of what's possible with God in these steps. You know, my brother, I always grew up in my brother's shadow. My brother was older than me, and he got great grades in school, and I kept getting thrown out. They gave me the rest cure. And you know, and then my brother learned how to play the clarinet, and I couldn't even master the tonet. It was a little sweet potato flute, you know. My brother graduated from college and got a master's degree, and I became a alcoholic and a drug addict. And then, you know, my brother got a PhD, and I went to prison. And, you know, shortly before my father died, he said to me, "Dennis, why can't your brother be more like you?" The miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous for you. It's been such a pleasure speaking. I hope you'll get a chance to see Vivian at 1:30 in gratitude in your attitude. And, you know, I want to close with just this one little thing. You know, I don't know if you remember when you were a kid, your parents would take a piece of candy and they'd hide it behind their back and they'd let you pick which hand. And, you know, if you got it wrong, sometimes they'd let you pick again, you know. Well, God's played that game with me my whole life. Only God plays it really simple. He'd say, "Dennis, you see this hand? It's empty. Now, which one do you want?" My whole life, I kept picking the empty hand. Today, I choose God. I choose life. I choose Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. Thank you, everybody. So I've kept such good time up here that we're really early. And so it says here that if there's time left over, that I can share a little bit of my own story, which I'm going to take just a few minutes. And so I'm Lori. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is February 26, 1988. Thank you. My home group is the White Rock, White Rock Women's Group in New Mexico, which is about 35 miles north of Santa Fe. My husband of almost 30 years is sitting up here. And today's his 50th birthday. So give him crap when you see him. Those are my victories. Those are just a few of my victories. And I was thinking about what I've heard our great speakers share about what those victories are. And the way I see it right now, every single one of us sitting in this room is a victory. Because we're sitting here. And, you know, my husband and I got here at the convention 2 days ago. And I wasn't even planning, actually, on coming to the International Convention until about 4 or 5 weeks ago. Because I was planning our state convention. And I was just really busy with that. And you guys taught me real well to focus on what's in front of me and do what's in front of me. And all of a sudden, I came home from one of our convention planning meetings. And I said, we're going to go to the international convention. I don't care what we got to do, but we're going to go. And from there, things just began to fall into place. And that's how being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous has been for me. You guys just tell me what to do. I show up. I pay attention. I know one of my first sponsors is here. Show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. I'm really good at the first two or three, but I'm really bad at the last one. And coming here, you know, what the gift I got, the victories I've received so far is I wasn't planning on chairing a meeting. I got asked probably just a few weeks ago by Rick Walker to chair this meeting, and I really thank him for that. That's something that I would have never imagined me doing ever. I remember the first two international conventions coming here and seeing people up at the podium thinking, oh my God, I could never be like that. I could never stand up in front of anyone and say anything like that. And now you can't, you know, shut me up half the time. I really like being up here. But, you know, that's not the thing. The thing of it is you guys taught me how to do that. You know, you guys taught me how to get up here and do that, even though I'm shaking in my boots. And like, you know, Buster said, you know, you want to get up here and say all the right things, but the bottom line is, you know, I'm human and I'm going to say what I need to say. And I asked my higher power to help me say what I needed to say. So the gifts I've gotten, this I wanted to just talk about a couple things. And to me, victory and defeat is finding what... How is that manifested in my sobriety? Well, first of all, it's manifested just by getting me, you know, here this weekend. But before that, it got me into these rooms. I can't even tell you if my higher power had showed me everything that was going to happen in the last 20 some years, I would have never believed it. If my higher power would have told me that I would have sat across from a couple of people, actually four people from Japan yesterday, listening to some music from people that were playing music from South America over at the Riverwalk, and have a conversation through a woman who speaks very good English, but they were all from Japan. And the fact that, you know, we were able to sit there and have a conversation with them about Alcoholics Anonymous. They were friends of Alcoholics Anonymous, not alcoholics, but they had this neat thing going on over in Japan where they would get together and have meetings for alcoholics. And so they brought several Japanese alcoholics here to this convention. And that totally blows me away. And, you know, so just the fact that I could sit and have that conversation, my husband, what you guys taught me to do also was to get involved. And so if you're feeling a little out of place or maybe just uncomfortable around crowds, the best way to get more comfortable with that, and poor my husband, yesterday morning or 2 days ago when we got here, we signed up and there was barely anyone here. And we said, okay, let's go. I said, let's go sign up to volunteer. Let's do something. He's like, what? He's like, no, let's just go and see. So we go over to the volunteer. He goes, yeah, we need on-site volunteers Friday morning at 7 o'clock. And he looks at me and he's like, I don't think so. No, let's do it. Let's do it. We got to do it. So we did it. And we get our little green shirts and we show up about 6:50-something. And they say, okay, you're going to do this and you're going to start greeting the people as they come onto on-site. And I tell you what, I could not get this man away from greeting people and helping people. He, you know, he's a friend of Alcoholics Anonymous, but he was sitting there helping people from South America. He's bilingual. And the gift was, by having those shirts on, people came up to us over and over again all day, no matter how exhausted. I wasn't even giving coherent answers anymore. And they were coming up to me and approaching me. That's victory through defeat to me, is because it's like all I did was show up. And you guys taught me that. And you taught me that if I didn't feel a part of, and that's what I felt like in my disease of alcoholism, and that's what's present today still, even though I haven't picked up that drink, is that part of me that doesn't feel a part of and is constantly pulling me away. So you said, okay, so you feel like that, so make yourself a part. So that's what I did, and boy, I'm one of you, no matter what, you know, and I'm one of you because I say I am, whether I put on a green shirt or not. And to me, that's victory through defeat, because that's what my alcoholism does, is it totally separates me between me and you. And that's the miracle, I believe, of this international convention, is that we all come together, through all over the world, and I don't know you, but if I just stop and I look at your badge and I hold out my hand and I introduce myself and I start talking to you, even though it's difficult, even though there might be a language barrier, a culture barrier, a belief barrier, I'm just like you. And so that's kind of my challenge to everybody in this room today. If you are not feeling a part of, or if you are, all the better, go up to someone from another country. Go up to somebody that doesn't speak the same language as you and give them a hug and hold out your hand and be a part of. And I think that's the victory that I've been feeling. And I wouldn't have been able to do that without Alcoholics Anonymous. I would not have been doing anything like that. So that's my sharing with that. And with that, I just want to thank everybody for coming to our meeting today. And I want to, again, give another round of applause for our great speakers.